It's different in chase races when, you know, the common courtesy of, hey, your car's faster than mine, you know, I'm going to let you go and then maybe I'll catch you by the end of the race. It kind of has gone out the door, especially at this part of the chase where now whoever wins is going into the finals. There's a little more to that where you can't just give up a spot and expect and hope to get it back at the end of the race.
Well, listen, this is playoff, whatever sport you want to talk about, this playoff. This is the way playoff sports happen.
Playoffs.
You know, that's the way it happens. If you have an opportunity to make a move and advance in the playoffs, and especially in this format, where if you win any one of these three races, you automatically put yourself, and especially this first one, you can take, if I can move a guy out of the way, win a race, and confirm my place in the championship event, man, I don't have a problem. He didn't wreck him. You know, it's one of those things where that's racing. And I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, Arnold, but I mean, that's racing.
That is old school racing. You get up there, if they are in your way and you got a faster car, you make a little contact, let them know that you're there, make them contact the second time, let them know you're there. The third time, you give them a little nudge and kind of slide them out of the way and take the position.
Just, you know, a little knock on the back door, say, hey.
Yeah.
I'm faster than you.
Move over.
It's time. You either get out of the way or I'm going to get you out of the way.
And that's an age-old tradition. Jeff Gordon was big about doing that against Rusty Wallace a few times. There's been untold times when people have moved cars out of the way with the chrome horn.
Yeah, and it definitely was kind of
the chrome horn.
Yeah,
that's terrific.
Just wanted to rattle his cage, right?
Yeah.
But I mean, I think it was kind of a stellar move on Denny Hamlin's part. I don't want to use the word I was about to use on radio, but it was a big time move for somebody that doesn't have a lot of that aggression on the track, to me. And Denny Hamlin's always been.
But doesn't this format bring a little aggression out, especially in this? You know, there's eight guys left, you know, these are, you know, eight of the best drivers in the world, probably definitely eight of the best drivers in the sport. And when you have an opportunity to put yourself in a championship where you know that you're going to be one of those guys that are going to get to compete for a championship, to me, that ups the ante, ups the pressure, ups the stakes. And so when those opportunities come, you know, it's hard to just say, well, I'm just going to sit around and ride behind this guy when I know that I can beat him. And if it takes a little nudge, it takes a little nudge.
Yeah, it definitely was a nudge. Well, one person in the JGR stable that wasn't around to get in any of those kind of battles was Carl Edwards, somebody that we probably would have said at the beginning of the year or even at the beginning of the chase would be somebody you would think, a driver you would think, that would be in the Final Four. Arnold, it seemed like when you're going to have a problem, you don't want it to happen at this time of the year, and tire issue got him, and he got him into the wall.
Yeah, you can't have blowouts. You know, you can't have part failures. You've got to be clean, as clean as you're going to be all year long. You got to be clean right now. And Carl Edwards blew a tire, pounded the wall, and got himself into a lot of trouble.
Don't you think? To me, I think that's the beauty of this format. You know, there's a lot of old schoolers out there that maybe say that this is not really the format that they grew up on, or that was how we decided championships. You know, it was about longevity and consistency and all that sort of stuff. But part of the beauty of this format is that it is a playoff type format. You have a brief window where you've got to perform well, and it doesn't matter if you squeak by as the 12th driver, then the 8th driver, you know, or whatever. As long as you squeak by and move yourself into position into that next round, that's all it takes. I mean, Kevin Harvick's a perfect example. You know, this is a guy that's won a couple races during this chase, but in reality, he's needed to win those races because they haven't performed well in the other ones. But they've given themselves to keep advancing. And now Carl Edwards has put himself in a situation where they're going to have to pull a rabbit out of a hat if they're going to find a way to advance. But he still has a chance, even with a pitiful, 38th place finish or whatever he ended up finishing. Even with a pitiful finish that he had, he still has two more opportunities to go out and win a race. And if they can win a race, they put themselves in prime position to win a championship.
But the difference, I think, between that person you mentioned earlier and Carl Edwards, who I'm still not saying his name, but I think Carl's not built. His team's not built. Carl's not built as a race car driver, as one of those guys that can go out and could get you a win at any point in time. Carl's more of the average, not average, but the consistent guy that's going to drive great every
day. He's a consistent guy. Matt Kenseth is in that same kind of boat, but this is a new format. And if you're going to, you know, the pressure is now onward. You've got nothing to lose but go out and win. You've got to go out and win a race. There's no other way to get in. You can't pass that many guys or make up that many spots without a bunch of help. So you've got to find a way to win. So I would think that this format makes you uber aggressive, that you have to go out there and find a way to win and not worry about where you finish. It's, we've got to win, we've got to go. That's part of the beauty of what, I guess, the Voldemort of NASCAR racing right now, the guy that can't be named in here, Kevin Harvick, has been in this situation where he's been terrible. Well, not terrible, but they put themselves in must-win situations, and every time that has happened, he has found a way to rise to the occasion and win a race in advance.
Yeah, and I mean, I think that so if I were to ask you right now, Scott and Arnold both, do you think Carl Edwards in the next two races wins?
That's a tough one.
Well, that's a different. That's a horse of a different color.
That's what he's got to do to get in.
Well,
right?
I mean, you're probably right. He does have to win. Does he win?
I'd have to say that Kevin Harvick has probably
Who?
A better chance of winning
we
one of the next
name.
Two races.
The car
Carl
between
Edwards
three
does
and five
because of their history of the
right.
way they run
because of the way. You can look at recent history,
yeah.
Just like in this chase, and see that Kevin Harvick is capable of winning. They've won twice in this chase already. Only Jimmy Johnson has won more, but they're in a situation now where they have to win. We've not seen Carl Edwards do that yet.
That's my point, and I think that's what we'll get to. All right, speaking of Stuart Haas Racing. And that person that you mentioned earlier with Kevin Harvick.
Is that the car? Is that we got to figure out a name for him?
You know,
is that the guy?
The
guy?
Four.
The guy in the not the three or not the five?
You know, he did have a bad run and he didn't punch anybody. I'm imagining that his crew chief probably got the brunt of that because, of course, it's not his fault when he loses. But I'm sure he may have punched him for not having his car set up correctly.
Hey.
Or maybe his 20th place finish, which happened to be the best finish out of the JGR cars. We've talked all year about Kurt Busch being really consistent. Of course, Kevin Harvick being pretty consistent and running up front all the time. Guys, it's not a good time as a team to kind of have your worst race of the year as a team with your top car finishing 20th.
It's one of those things where Kevin Harvick can't blame anybody but himself because he got called speeding.
Right.
It's a speeding penalty. And that's entirely on the driver and the speed that he enters pit row. He got caught in the first segment, I think
Yeah,
he
very
was.
First segment.
And, you know, it's going to happen from time to time, I know, but this is where you have to be extra clean. In my way of thinking, if you're in championship form, you've almost got to be ultra conservative there and not push that limit right to the edge. And he pushed it to the edge. He got caught.
Well, I guess my point, Scott, on the with the whole team aspect is if you're as much money that's on the line, and we don't know these contracts or anything like that as far as if you make the chase, you know, the sponsor gives you this, or if you make the chase as a driver, you get bonuses and stuff. But you got to feel pretty good about Tony Stewart, of course, JGR, you know, with the opportunity he has to have, you know, a couple of cars in the chase, if not three, you know, maybe four, who knows. But the thing is, with your team performing well throughout the year, at least two of your four cars, it's a big-time thing to where they possibly could have no cars in the final four.
You're right, but, I mean, we still
that?
Got...
Can you get that? Tape that.
Yeah, we do have that. You can listen to that on the podcast now that I actually got the audio recording. I mean, yeah, could it happen? Sure. I mean, you know, but at some, you know, you've got to find a way to get to the next round, and they have put themselves in a tough position. But it wouldn't shock anybody to see one of those two cars, especially the four car, win a race because that's what he's done in this chase. Is they have been either hot are cold. There's been no, I mean, last time we talked to Alex Hayden, he talked about this. They've been consistently inconsistent. They have been terrific 1 week and terrible the other weeks. But they've managed to win a race. You know, I don't think they can points race, because it looks to me like those Toyotas, they're not making any mistakes. I mean, what'd they finish? 2, 3, and 4 this week or something like that. So those Toyotas, Hamlin, Kenseth, and Busch, you just don't expect those guys to make a mistake. So they're not going to be able to points race. That means they're going to have to find a way to win a race. And it's going to be difficult to do if your name, especially for Kurt Busch, because he's got 1-2 wins, one win this year, one win. You know, it's a little more difficult. You're going to have to be capable of a multi-time winner, especially with the tracks we have coming up. Harvick has a little more. I think he has a little more cushion because he has been really terrific at Phoenix the last several years. I mean, there was one stretch where he'd won like 4 or 5 straight races at Phoenix. So, you know, he's definitely capable of winning that race. But you don't want to have to wait till that week to put yourself in position. So, you know, this is an important week for Kurt Busch. If he's going to find a way to win, Texas may be his best opportunity.
Yeah, and that's the thing of it is, if you're running, you look at top tens. Kurt Busch has got 20 of them, but he's only got one win.
20 top 10s.
And one win and 8 top 5s.
He wins
right
the
now, top 5s and top 10s not going to get it.
In the old system, that's exactly what you want to do. Just top 10 people, top 5, get some top 5s, throw a sprinkle in a win or two here and there, and you're in perfect position. But this is not the old format. So it's based on performance and short segments. And you've got to find a way to put yourself in the position to advance to the next round.
That's it. And, you know, one of those guys, Brad Keselowski, has run pretty good all year and set himself up. I think, I want to say if he had 20 or 25 more laps, he might have caught the 48, you know, and been able to pass him. But he is, for somebody that can be so stinking immature sometimes, he's become a pretty mature race car driver.
Oh, I'm a Keselowski fan. The one thing I like about him is he'll say what's on his mind. Now, whether or not that's the correct thing, we can debate that all we want. But he's opinionated. He is a good race car driver. I think his reputation has shown a little maturity. I believe the garage itself gives him a little more credit, because I think there was a lot of people out there at one point in time, and Jimmy Johnson Chad Knauss used to call it a fluke that they won the championship the year that they won it, that it was fluky. And, you know, it was just they performed well in that stretch of races and won a championship. So I think his reputation and his prowess behind the wheel has reached the level of elite status in the sport. You know, if we were in the old system, he would still very much be alive, if not already the champion. You know, he's had a terrific year. They've raced well. But in this situation, they're in they're just going out there trying to win races. They've got nothing else to live for this season. So they're going to go out. Same with Martin Truex. I mean, Truex Jr. He's in a situation where all they care about is wins now, and they're just going to go out there. And those guys could be spoilers, because they could win. They're capable of winning races the next 2 weeks and not getting that free pass in. And if it becomes a point race, you know, people like Kurt Busch and Kevin Harvick and Carl Edwards are in trouble if it becomes points that's going to get you to the next round, not wins.
Yeah, and I mean, you look at those cars like Keselowski and those guys that are already out that can be spoilers, and that's the big thing coming up to the mile-and-a-half tracks where, you know, Truex has run really fast at the mile-and-a-half tracks. All right, speaking of somebody who owned mile-and-a-half tracks for a long period of time and seems like he may have had his mojo back, Jimmy Johnson gets his first win in the chase and actually solidly puts himself into the finals.
For the first time ever. I mean, it's amazing that this is, what, the third year of the chase?
Yes.
It's the first time he's been He's been in the final group at Homestead.
Yeah, it's crazy, but ran a very good race. I mean, even though Denny Hamlin tried to put him into the wall, didn't get it done, but got around him, still come back and got it. Looked like old championship form, Jimmy Johnson. When Alex calls, we're definitely going to – I'm going to get lottery ticket numbers from him,
no
probably,
kidding.
Because he kind of
pulled that one
this.
Out of left field, and he's been right on the money.
Big time. So, but one of the things before we hear from him is that, you know, is it almost scary for everybody – else that you've got somebody that's won six championships, knows how to close the deal, and now you think about, well, you know, who are we going to have at Homestead? Nobody really knew who was going to be there, and then bam, here comes the 48. He's there, six championships. I think he's well on his way to winning another one.
Is that your
prognostication?
Prognostication there. Is he capable of winning? Absolutely, he's capable of winning. I'd be interested to see. Once we see who all the competitors are in that final, because those Toyotas, especially if as strong as they've been, their collective group, plus if somebody like Kevin Harvick does make it, finds a way to get there, we know how good he's been in a short run. So I'll hold out predicting six time becoming seven time just yet, but he's definitely going to be a factor in. Six, 8, 10, 12 weeks ago, who would have thought that?
Alex Hayden.
that he'd have three wins in seven races.
But I guess
three wins. Listen, I mean, let's think about that. This is his third win in seven races of the chase after they had two wins the whole previously before, up to that point in the season. They had two wins, and one of those was like a six-lap. He led like six laps in Atlanta or something like that to win a race. That was it. So it's just been amazing that when the playoffs have hit, they've kicked it up and taken it to another level.
Some of the things about the chase, though, when you think about it, Arnold, you've got, in baseball, a lot of times, if you can remember the old Miami Marlins, that I'd say old Miami Marlins, their expansion team, right? But they used to come in hot and get the wild card. And, they were really hot. They coming in, and that carried through to the World Series and then helped them win. These last three races before the chase is one of those things where you start looking at those teams that get really hot and have that really good chance. You think of Kevin Harvick, when he won the championship, was really hot there at Phoenix. Scott mentioned he doesn't lose at Phoenix. You go into it with momentum, and that's going to make a big difference. With Jimmy Johnson, you really, if you're the other drivers, you don't want him to have any momentum. But in this case, I think with him winning this race this close to the chase, he can go out possibly and sweep the next two races.
It's very possible, and that's a scary thing that he could do that. But here's the thing of it is, the last 10 races, you've seen Jimmy Johnson in particular, but Hendrick's organization, pick it up. And one of the interviews I heard over the last few weeks has been the fact that they found something. They figured something out that they had been missing and had really helped them.
No, the whole organization is – I mean, you're right on the money. The whole organization has run better the last 8 weeks. It just seems like those – we're starting – it starts with qualifying. We're starting to see Alex Bowman, Jimmy Johnson, Chase Elliott. Those guys started – there for a while, it was hard to get any of them into the top 10 in qualifying, get to the final round of qualifying. Then, the next thing we know, they're finishing third, fourth, fifth, sixth, up there, and they've hit speed in those cars, and we know what kind of drivers they are. So, obviously, the organization has found something, and what a great time of the year, especially for Jimmy Johnson, to find some things and put yourself in position.
One thing about it is, if I'm any other driver right now and I'm looking at Jimmy Johnson at Homestead, that's got to worry me.
I'm nervous.
Yeah, big time. Let's hear from Jimmy Johnson after his win at Martinsville on Sunday.
Running out of fuel at one point. What was the panic at that moment? Did you think the day was done?
Yeah, a lot of... I'm out of breath from screaming. A lot of moments, but anything you want in life, you got to work for it. Isn't going to come easy, and we knew that. Coming into this race, and there's so many challenges to this track, but just so thankful for this race team. To win on this weekend here at this racetrack with the tragedy we had here in 04, just want to think of all the loved ones that we lost on that airplane and their families and friends, and just the right time to start winning races.
Is this a moment you have to pinch yourself that you're going to battle it out for a Homestead, or in Homestead, Miami, for a championship, Jimmy?
Yeah, I've been trying to ignore this conversation about seven, and now I can't. So we're locked in.
you can't avoid the seventh conversation now because it's going to come up for the next several weeks.
Very true. I'm just honored to be in this position, and I wouldn't be here if it wasn't for the belief that Lowe's and all their employees had in me way back when I was running about 10th or 15th in the Busch Series, give me this chance. Rick Hendrick, Jeff Gordon, all the people that have believed in me to get me to this point. It's crazy that we have a shot at seven now, and I just we couldn't do it without our partners, without Chevrolet and Valvoline, and the list goes on and on. Everybody knows who they are, and thank you very much.
Anytime you can join Dale Earnhardt Sr. and Richard Petty, that's a big conversation. How much will you think about that over the next 4 weeks?
Probably going to lie to you guys and say I'm not thinking about it at all, but it's inevitable. Fortunately, I don't have to think about it for 3 weeks, I guess. But we're going to enjoy this and savor this and try to get our ducks in a row for Homestead. This is cool.
So that was Jimmy Johnson. Of course, I thought he was going to get a little teary-eyed there when he talked about Lowe's and Jeff Gordon and everybody giving him a chance and all that stuff. Yeah, that was good. We need to
hug
up
somebody.
With a bit on that or something. All right, we're going to go to break. When we come back, the one, the only Alex Hayden will be joining us from MRN Radio. Look forward to that. You're listening to The Finish Line, brought to you by 101.3 The Buzz. We'll be back in a second.
Listen up, y'all. Ben Phillips, Home Rate Mortgage, 805-9100. I'm in the business of saving people money. And if you want to save money, pick that cell phone up right now. 805-9100. I received a call that I won't forget. The guy is a Chattanooga police officer who served our great country in the Air Force. A true American hero. Our hero is renting, which costs too much for a space too small. We helped him achieve the American dream. And the best part is this. He purchased a $180,000 home with zero down. His payment is $200 less than what his rent was. And now he has a safe place with more space to raise his family. It's easy, and you can do it too. It just takes 10 minutes and one phone call. 805-9100.
Turn a house into a home. Y'all step back to 1864 and relive the South's finest hour. Witness a moving performance and dig into the greatest Southern recipes direct from the Confederate White House. Loads of fun food and unfiltered Southern history. The Button Willow Civil War Dinner Theater is just minutes from Chattanooga. Y'all got a call for reservations, 658-7478. We're straightening out Yankees one at a time.
Hey folks, Dale from Dale's Heating Air. We all know things work better when they are maintained and serviced on a regular basis. Your car, your yard, even relationships. Well, your heating and air system is no different. When is the last time your heating and air conditioning was serviced? Can't remember? Well, spring is just around the corner and warm weather will be here soon. What's that mean for your heating and air conditioning system? It means it's time to call Dale's Heating and Air to make sure old man winter didn't take his toll. And your air conditioning is ready to keep your family cool and comfortable this season. When your heating and air conditioning is working at its best, you get the comfort you want, save money, and your system will last longer. Now is the best time to call Dale's Heating and Air to schedule maintenance on your heating and air conditioning system. For service you can trust, just call Dale's. 236-4600. That's 236-4600 or online at justcalldales.com.
Listen up, y'all. Ben Phillips, Home Rate Mortgage, 805-9100. We just helped an operations manager retire faster, saving his family $400 per month. Let this story be your story. 805-9100, homeratemortgage.com.
Welcome back to The Finish Line, brought to you by 101.3 The Buzz. Jamie Kyle, Arnold Tarpley, Scott Webb, Jason Hildebrand might have got into a flu shot or two.
I don't know.
Made him a little sick.
Jason, it's been a struggle.
It has. I mean, this whole year has kind of been bad for him. Somebody that this year has not been bad for, though, is as I saw him holding his new Nike shoe up. Maybe, I don't know if he was trying to do that, but again, we know he's sponsored by Nike. He just won't tell us about the contract. But Alex Hayden joins us from MRN Radio. Alex, I'm sure you're enjoying your downtime. What golf course did you hit today?
Actually, I did not hit them today. Believe it or not, crazy.
My goodness. That's disappointing, man.
It is. Isn't it? I didn't mean to let you guys out. No, I had a lot of things that I had to do with some appointments and things of that nature today. So, believe me, tomorrow, tomorrow's the day we're going to get on the course.
Tomorrow's the day. I kind of figured it would be soon. That's for
sure.
Well,
he's got to get ready. He's got to go out to Phoenix in a couple weeks.
That's
and
true.
You got to have your golf game in hand until when you go out there.
I would venture to guess that he'll be leaving early to go to Phoenix, during the week.
I will, yeah.
Mental note, don't try to call Alex on the week before the Phoenix race.
Exactly. So, Alex, we also always appreciate you coming on. I know big game tonight with the Cubs. I know you're cheering for the Cubs, right?
You know what? I really don't have a favorite. I love a good story, but obviously the Cubs are the story. So that wouldn't be a bad thing to see. It wouldn't be bad to see Cleveland win it either, given the fact that that franchise has struggled over the years as well. But, you know, with no pure favorite, it would be nice to see the Cubs win finally.
It's always good when you come on a racing show and you get asked a baseball question.
That's the question on everybody's mind right now.
That is true.
Is who's going to win this thing tonight? There's going to be 40 million people watch the game tonight.
So the question on my mind, Alex, this is what I have to ask you: is that one? I need the lottery numbers for tonight. I'll go to North Carolina and I'll stay here in Tennessee and I'll play both because at the first of the chase, you did say the sleeper would be Jimmy Johnson. Here we go. You got Jimmy Johnson in the chase now. So, you know, we were talking earlier about this has to literally frighten pretty much everybody else in the field with the momentum that Jimmy Johnson's going to have going in these next two races and then the final race coming off this win and putting really a complete race together with a little bit of struggle in the middle with Denny Hamlin and then able to finish it off.
Yeah, you know, and we'll start first and foremost with Johnson when it comes to racing at Miami. The thing is Jimmy's never had to go to Miami Homestead and win the race. He's never had to go there and really compete at their best. If you think about all of his championships, he always had to go to Homestead, finish 18th or 19th or better to win the championship, and that's what they've always had to do. So we don't really know how good Jimmy is at Homestead because he's never been in the position where he's had to go win the race. So that's the first thing that's kind of a question mark. But, yeah, when you look back at Sunday's race, early on, he was racing hard with Denny Hamlin. They got together, wrinkled up the fender on Jimmy's car, and then, of course, he got in the back of Allmendinger, wrinkled up the other fender, all in the same green flag stretch, which meant he had to come to pit road during that next caution, and they were the last ones off pit road just to make sure they had all the clearance on the tires. They went all the way to the tail end of the lead lap because of the long pit stop. He was able to drive his way back towards the front. I thought it was a phenomenal race with he and Hamlin throughout the event. Both of them had to go to the back for different reasons. Denny with his pit road speeding penalty, which was his 93rd of the year, or something like that. But you know, it was fun to watch, and I just love racing in Martinsville anyway, just because nobody can get away from each other.
And that's one of the things that we discussed earlier, too, was that JGR seems to, you had three cars that were really good for JGR. Carl had the unfortunate incident with the tire, and I think he would have probably been up there with him. But it seems like that they couldn't really get up to Jimmy Johnson or gain any grounds because all of their cars were kind of the same, and they were battling with each other.
Yeah, I think you're right about that. And it got to a point in the closing lap, they knew that they weren't going to have the speed to just run Jimmy down and pass him. So it looked like it was, let's just finish second, third, and fourth. Well, then the beauty of the NASCAR chase format, unlike other stick and ball sports, is in this playoff format, it's not just the championship contenders that get to play. It's everybody. And then you had Keselowski, who was out of the chase as far as the championship goes. He had nothing to lose. He had a fast race car. He went up there and started barreling his way towards the front of the field. Ended up finishing second, but he was able to kind of mix up that three-car JGR second through fourth deal, and that kind of forced those guys to get the race in each other. Had some hurt feelings along the way with Kyle Busch not being so happy about something between himself with Denny and Matt, too. But I know, right? I think it was an interesting run, but overall, those three Gibbs cars, they came home with good top five finishes. They can go on to fight another day this weekend at Texas.
Kevin Harvick and Kurt Busch are kind of on the flip side of that, just kind of so-so runs, middle of the pack. This is a trend we've seen from Harvick so far in this chase where they're winning or they're not doing so well. I know Phoenix is around the corner, and he's won, like, I don't know, 8 bazillion races out there. But how concerned is Stuart Haas as an organization about at least getting one of these cars to Homestead with a chance to win a championship?
Well, yeah, they would love that. I mean, they've got 2 of the 8 cars right now. Let's call it 2 of the 7. If they were Jimmy winning this race at Martinsville, it basically narrows it down now. It's not about just point racing. It puts the heat on everybody to go win, not only Texas, but potentially Phoenix. But as far as Harvick goes, this is the same situation they were in last year. They had to end up going to Phoenix in a must-win to advance, and then they were able to pull that off. I'm just not a believer this year with Kevin Harvick and that team. Not only did they get one lap down, they were 2 laps down at Martinsville, and they were able to get one of them back. All the Stuart Haas cars were finished the race 1 lap down or more. So that tells you they're get out to lunch at Martinsville Speedway. So, yeah, they want one of their cars in that Final Four come Miami, but realistically, I don't know. I don't know if it can happen. I'm not a big believer right now in Kevin Harvick and being able to advance, even though he's, as you said, he's won 8 bazillion races at Phoenix. I don't think it necessarily matters. They've struggled so much and been so Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde this year. You don't ever know which team's going to show up at the racetrack. So while they've had some success, I don't necessarily think it's going to continue throughout the season.
Well, the one thing, number one, if you would have listened last week, Kevin Harvick is not my favorite person, by the way.
Jamie's got some issues.
I've banned him from my power rankings. I don't care how good he is. And, you know, I even come up with a comment of maybe he got out and punched Rodney Childers this past week because he didn't win, because he tended to do that with everybody. With his helmet on, by the way. He probably would have went up to Rodney with his helmet on and punched him. So
easy.
I won't say anything else about that. All right, let's get to something else that was quite as frustrating, and probably for you too, on pit road, which I'm sure you had it figured out, you know, 2 laps into the caution and not 27
laps. Yeah, we almost sent the bat
laps.
Signal directly to Alex there, didn't we?
Right. What kind of mess up, number one, did they have going on? And then number two, why didn't they just throw the red flag, get everything situated, and then get them going?
Well, first of all, it was the perfect storm, and you hate that something like that happened. I don't know why they didn't throw the red flag. I think overall, mostly it's because they had it pretty well figured out until some of the teams started saying, hey, wait a minute, what about this, what about that, what about the other? So it just kept continuing on and on. We got the one to go 6 or 7 different times before something else came back up. So why didn't they throw a red? I don't think they expected it to go as far as they did, because NASCAR was pretty much buttoned up and ready to go. A lot of it came down to when I use Matt Kenseth as the example, to where they were at coming off the pit lane in relation to where the leader at the time, which was Allmendinger, when the caution flag came out, and where things were going. So they had to go back and look at the scoring loops around the racetrack, which are the computer embedded lines around the track. They had to use all the available video that they had at their disposal to make sure this car was in fact in front of that one or behind this one, and so on and so forth. And they don't have to just do that with the leaders or the front 3 or 4 that are on the lead lap. They've literally got to do it with every single race car on the speedway that's still running, to make sure everybody is in a fair spot where they're supposed to be. So to me, it was just a perfect storm. The middle of green flag pit stops. Some had just made stops. Some were on pit road when the caution came out. Gosh, I don't know. I feel kind of bad for NASCAR, because nobody ever tunes into a sport to watch the umpire or the referee. But NASCAR was put in that position. And they had to do what they had to do to get it straightened out. Again, they had it pretty well buttoned up until the teams kept asking questions. And that's what kept delaying the restart. So even though they did their best to answer everybody's questions, and rightly so, maybe they should have put the red out. And that's one of those that you can Monday morning quarterback.
Right. That was what I was just going to say. Hindsight's 20/20. I mean, anybody could say, well, they should have just thrown the red flag and got it all situated once it all was going on. I mean, there's not really a great solution there, is there, Alex?
There's not. There's people that complain and say, well, NASCAR's just got too many flipping rules out there. Well, you know what? If we didn't have the wave around, which was part of the chaos on this, then we'd have had five cars on the lead lap anyway, and that would be no fun for anybody. So the wave around's a good thing. It's a good thing for the teams. But I think there is a lot of confusion, including with some of the race teams, because let's face it, some of these teams that had to take the wave around, they're typically not in that position. So the rules were kind of forgotten by a lot of people, fans and some of the team members included, that why are some lap down cars restarting in front of the lead lap cars? It's because if you have to take the wave around, you're getting one of your laps back by doing that. NASCAR's given you that free pass, but they're not going to just put you back at the front of the field. They're going to put you around and you fall in line behind everybody else. So the cars that are one or more lap down, well, they have the right to be on that track position. The wave around cars, by rule, go to the back of the field. Doesn't matter if there's lap cars in between them and the leaders or not. That's the rule, and a lot of the fans obviously didn't know that rule because I was watching some social media after the race was over.
Come on.
A lot of people didn't know. Yeah, no.
Come on.
You know, and that's fair. That's fair. I mean, because it was the perfect storm, and a lot of people don't know the rules, even though it happens every week when there's a wave around. You just don't pay attention to it until your favorite driver is in that position.
That's it. We're talking to Alex Hayden with MRN Radio on the Finish Line on 101.3 The Bus. Alex, there's I know silly season seems to start earlier, I guess, every year.
Does it ever end?
I know, that's true.
Yeah.
We've heard some comments from Greg Biffle about being unhappy and stuff like that. We know that Bowyer's going to, you know, Stuart Haas. Have you heard any other rumblings? I know, who was it with Childress? Paul Menard just basically re-upped this year, or for next year,
yeah.
In the 27 cars.
Matt Borland.
Yeah, with Matt Borland coming over. And that's Ryan Newman's old crew chief, correct?
It is. And,
yeah.
And that's perplexing in a couple of things. Matt Borland has spent the last couple of years not even in NASCAR. Even though he worked at Stuart Haas Racing, he was on the Haas Formula One team as an engineer.
Well, in essence, though, Alan, or Alex, has Paul Menard ever been in NASCAR?
here we go.
Wow.
There's a shot.
Yeah, you know, there's two things about it. Number one, Matt Borland to leave Formula One and leave Stuart Haas Racing to go to RCR, that's a head scratcher. Why do you do that? Is he sick of Formula One, which a lot of people are? That's the first thing. The second thing is the Menard family that owns the Menard stores around the Midwest. They're billionaires. I mean, and they can have what they want by paying for it. And they wanted the best. To me, Paul Menard and that whole group said, "Look, we think we're good enough to win races. And we think we're good enough to compete in the chase. But we need somebody that's good enough to make cars go fast." And Matt Borland's certainly proven to do that. So they went and they hired Matt Borland and said, "Come on, you're coming to RCR and you're going to be our crew chief." So I think Menard's making a statement with this, saying, "I'm tired of messing around. I'm ready to win races, and I'm ready to at least contend in the chase." So I thought it was a pretty good move all the way around. You mentioned Biffle. I expect that you'll hear an announcement within the next week or so that Biffle is going to a second JTG Doherty Chevrolet, so, and teammate with AJ Allmendinger.
I have a little bit of
question.
Breaking
news? Do I need to start the breaking news?
I saw something about that, but you know, my question there is, if he wants to perform well, AJ Allmendinger, I mean, unless he's just planning on winning at a road course, maybe.
Well,
that team hasn't been that good.
But they've been. I'll disagree with you a little bit. For the money that you're talking about, an organization spends, they've been pretty competitive.
Absolutely. Absolutely they have been. And Allmendinger, he was second at Martinsville back in the spring race. He was leading late in this one until all that, we were just discussing all that perfect storm with the rules and the wave arounds, and got himself the second half of the top 10. So he was in position again to have another solid run and potential win at Martinsville. He's run well the last couple of weeks with top 10 finishes. So
yeah, don't listen to Jamie Kyle, Alex. We believe you. No, that's right.
Yeah, no, there's two other things too. Keep in mind, JTG Doherty, and they have their technical alliance with Richard Childress Racing, and RCR hasn't won a race in how long now? I mean, so it's that the whole deal there. I mean, all of RCR and ECR engines and everybody involved, they're winless for the last couple of years. So it's not necessarily JTG Doherty that's struggling. I think it's the entire organization they're teamed up with. And then when you're Greg Biffle, do you really want to stay with Roush Fenway Racing if you get a chance to get out of there? I mean, let's call it what it is.
Yeah.
Roush Fenway's a mess, and they're struggling right now. They're trying to get things righted. They're working hard to try to do that, but you got a chance to go to a team that's at least got some glimmers of some top five finishes with JTG Doherty. That's the buzz. That doesn't necessarily mean it's going to happen, but that's kind of the buzz floating around right now.
Yeah.
That Biffle will go to a second car. And Tad Geschechter, that owns the team, along with Brad Gordy, they've said that, yeah, we would like to expand and have a second car, and they expect to make that announcement sometime in the next couple of weeks.
Well, so, you got to think, too, Biffle's probably going to bring some sponsorship over there, which on the flip side of that would be taking that away from Roush, which would hurt even more. I mean, we know 3M's followed him pretty much wherever he goes. So, I mean, that is kind of a money lift, I guess, for JTG Doherty as well.
You would think, but not necessarily. If you remember, 3M left Biffle and went to Hendrick. They've been sponsoring the 24 car.
That's right. Yeah.
So they've been searching for sponsorship over there at Roush Fenway. And Tad Geschechter owns JTG Doherty. He's made his living working with the supermarket chains and all the companies that go along with it. So that's why you see so many different sponsors on the 47. From Kingsford Charcoal to Bush's Baked Beans to all these basic products that we all know and have heard of, but they all have one thing in common. They're all sold at grocery stores.
Yeah.
And that's
yeah.
where Tad Geschechter's made his money. And he's got that relationship with all these companies. So this is an opportunity to get more brands out there and do it the right way. And I like the way that Tad and his team have run this. They didn't just go out immediately and go to a multi-car field. Or a multi-car team to field, because sometimes you bite off more than you can chew. They've gone the slow route. They made sure that they've made enough money to be able to bank it, to build it, and do it the right way, much like Furniture Row Racing's doing. They've been a one-car team. They're expanding to a second car next year with Eric Jones as the driver. They, too, have done it the slow way just to make sure they've done it the right way. So I think if I'm Greg Biffle, it's time. It's time to go, but when you look at Roush Fenway, that just leaves Trevor Bain, who's back with Advocare, and also Ricky Stenhouse Jr., who's not even completely sponsored next year on the 17 car, although they did announce that Fastenal coming back for, 16 races.
Right.
So they still have the rest of the year to get sponsored for Stenhouse. But when you look at the driver lineup, that's just about it. You've got Chris Buescher waiting in the wings, but there's no sponsorship there either. He stays over at Front Row for the time being, and then the Xfinity team, you've got Bubba Wallace, who's completely unsponsored and may be out at Roush Fenway if they can't find sponsorship in the Xfinity series next year. So there's a lot that goes along with it. The only thing that's solid and locked down, other than Bain and the 16 with Stenhouse, is Ryan Reed in the Xfinity series. He's a diabetic, and Lilly Diabetes, the Lilly company, has re-signed a multi-year deal to stay in the Xfinity series with one Sprint Cup race per year. So That's about it right now for Roush Fenway.
I think Lilly needs to sponsor me. I've been a diabetic since I was 24. And, yeah, maybe Ryan Reed will become my new favorite driver. We'll do
yeah,
it like that.
There you go.
Yeah.
So, that works.
That is
hey,
good.
Hey, Alex, hit him long, hit him straight, buddy.
Always try to. Doesn't necessarily mean it happens, so.
Are you on TV this weekend?
No, I'm actually off.
Wow.
I'm off this weekend. This is PRN's got the coverage this weekend on radio. NBC's got everything covered. And this is the one-off weekend that's been scheduled for the longest time, and I thought some way, somehow, it was going to get taken away from me, but here I am on Wednesday leading into the weekend and still have it off, so I don't know how that happened.
Well, definitely enjoy it, and Alex, we can't tell you how much we really thank you for joining us on Wednesday. So have a great week off, and enjoy watching the race from the comfort of your own couch.
We'll look forward to it, and thanks, guys, as always. We'll talk soon.
Thanks,
all right, buddy.
Alex.
Thanks, Alex.
All right,
that's Alex Hayden with pit reporter for MRN Radio, also for NBC, also for Fox, also for everybody else. So does a great job. I always think him doing that. All right, we got to hurry.
Yes, we do.
We got to go over power rankings.
We went in bonus time there with Alex.
Exactly. We got to do power rankings and picks to win when we come back. You're listening to The Finish Line, brought to you by 101.3 The Buzz. We'll be back.
Listen up, y'all. Ben Phillips, Home Rate Mortgage, 805-9100. I'm in the business of saving people money, and if you want to save money, pick that cell phone up right now, 805-9100. I received a call that I won't forget. The guy is a Chattanooga police officer who served our great country in the Air Force. A true American hero. Our hero was renting, which cost too much for a space too small. We helped him achieve the American dream. And the best part is this. He purchased a $180,000 home with zero down. His payment is $200 less than what his rent was. And now he has a safe place with more space to raise his family. It's easy, and you can do it too. It just takes 10 minutes and one phone call. 805-9100.
Y'all step back to 1864 and relive the South's finest hour. Witness a moving performance and dig into the greatest Southern recipes direct from the Confederate White House. Loads of fun food and unfiltered Southern history. The Button Willow Civil War Dinner Theater is just minutes from Chattanooga. Y'all got a call for reservations, 658-7478. We're straightening out Yankees one at a time.
Hey folks, Dale from Dale's Heating Air. We all know things work better when they are maintained and serviced on a regular basis. Your car, your yard, even relationships. Well, your heating and air system is no different. When is the last time your heating and air conditioning was serviced? Can't remember? Well, spring is just around the corner, and warm weather will be here soon. What's that mean for your heating and air conditioning system? It means it's time to call Dale's Heating and Air to make sure old man winter didn't take its toll, and your air conditioning is ready to keep your family cool and comfortable this season. When your heating and air conditioning is working at its best, you get the comfort you want, save money, and your system will last longer. Now is the best time to call Dale's Heating and Air to schedule maintenance on your heating and air conditioning system. For service you can trust, just call Dale's. 236-4600. That's 236-4600 or online at justcalldales.com.
Listen up, y'all. Ben Phillips, Home Rate Mortgage, 805-9100. We just helped an operations manager retire faster, saving his family $400 per month. Let this story be your story. 805-9100, homeratemortgage.com.
To me, the keys to winning at Texas was just having a fast car around the bottom of the racetrack. But then through the middle part of the race, I kind of moved around a little bit, and I actually started running the middle, and I was really good around the middle of the racetrack. So, you know, not just being mired down on the bottom of the racetrack, but being able to have that ability to kind of get off the bottom and find another groove that your car works good in.
That'd be Kyle Busch talking about Texas. In my opinion, maybe he'll go to the top and lose the race. So...
Oh,
maybe I just don't like Kyle Busch either.
Talking about bringing some opinions today.
I've got it. That's it. I've had enough Tennessee opinions this week out of the Knoxville media that I've kind of rubbed off on me. So, by the way, you're listening to The Finish Line. We're all here except for Jason. Jason, hope you get feeling better, man. And
me and him both.
Maybe we'll see you next
week. I'm playing hurt today.
That's it. So, all right, we need to go with our power rankings. All right, I've got the 48, Jimmy Johnson, I think, across the board. Everybody picked the 48 this week. And then I've got the 2, Brad Keselowski. Yeah, he's not in the chase, but still.
That's a way not to pick a non-chase.
There you go. And then the 18, aforementioned Kyle Busch, the 11 of Denny Hamlin. And then I stuck Kurt Busch in there. And then the 5th spot, yeah, he runs pretty good at the next couple of tracks. I like his chances of getting in. So, and then my pick to win... this week, I'm going with the 2-car.
First non-chase driver or non-compete, still competing chase driver to win a race.
I was torn because I looked at the chase drivers and then looked at some stats on who runs well and stuff like that. I actually did a little homework. And, I don't know that Jimmy Johnson's going to go for broke and try to win that race.
At this point, Arnold, does he even need? I mean, do you even pull the car off the
He could actually leave the car on the trailer for the next 2 weeks.
I mean, the only thing about it is he could be a spoiler. I mean,
but there's going to be 3 other guys there regardless of whether that they win or not.
Right.
So what does it matter? Go out there, do a few laps, wave to the crowd, pull it in, and pack it home.
Go to the house. Jason's real quick was the 48, the 22, the 18, The 20 and the 4, and he picked.
I'm actually stunned that you're actually reading
his
actual picks and not just making up stuff as you normally
do. It's not a work excuse this time.
No,
he actually, has a.
Oh, so if we're feeling a little under the weather, it's
right.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
And he paid me $20.
Yeah.
So do what you do. Arnold.
I've got the 48, number 1, the 18, number 2, the 11 of Denny Hamlin in the third slot. The 22 of Joey Logano in fourth, the 2 of Brad Keselowski in fifth, and I'm taking the 22 of Joey Logano to win this week.
Ah, going with the 22.
I just realized that I don't even have the 18 on my list. I must have been not paying attention, but my
power
rating.
You did put the 4 car in there, though.
I did put the
Arnold,
4. No, I made.
Arnold has
joined
my boycott.
I made it a point to put the 4 car in. I got Jimmy Johnson, Denny Hamlin, Matt Kenseth. It should have been 18. Let me write that down so I can make sure that I remember that 18 in the 4 spot and the 78 in there. I think that's how I
remember the rule book.
Yeah, I don't know. I think I'm making it up as we go along. But for the fifth week in a row, I'm going to pick Matt Kenseth until he wins.
If you keep picking him, I mean, it may be the reason he's not winning.
Well, he's still alive.
Yeah.
So that's all that matters. Do want to remind everybody, coming up right after our show here on Fast Talk, Doug Rice and Alexa Perkins welcomes Texas Motor Speedway's Eddie Gossage, Martinsville winning crew chief Chad Knaus, and Ray Eberham calls in.
Always good when old Ray Eberham, the cheater, calls in. Great NASCAR knowledge. Good. And you need to watch his show, too. Not that I'm plugging his show, but where he goes and finds old race cars and fixes them up. It's pretty cool.
It's good stuff.
So, all right. It's been another edition of The Finish Line. We'll talk to you next week. Make sure you listen to the race this Saturday night.
Saturday night?
Saturday night?
I don't know. You're looking at me. Saturday night I'll be watching Alabama LSU.
Yeah.
If the race is...
We'll go with Sunday. Just make sure you...
Well, hold on. I can give you the schedule here.
We need to find that. We should know that here.
You should put that on the show prep. But why break tradition now?
Oh, that's true.
Does look like we have a Saturday night race.
I was right, yes. So it'll be nice to watch Saturday night.
Nope, I lied. Sunday, 2 o'clock.
You had me at Saturday night. Yeah. All right, so Sunday at 2 o'clock. Make sure you tune in 101.3 The Buzz. They'll
the
have
experts,
live
the NASCAR experts.
Race coverage. We've all
Sunday's
been
better than Saturday night because everybody be watching Alabama LSU. So.
That's true. So, all right, we'll talk to you guys next week. Thanks for listening to The Finish Line. Powered by 101.3
The Buzz.